Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
I'm sorry. You can sit there and look and play with all your silly machines as much as you like.
Is Gascoigne going to have a crack? He is, you know. Oh, I think!
Himself 6 feet into the crowd and kung fu kicked a supporter who was without a shadow of a doubt giving him lip.
Oh, I say, it's amazing.
He does it tame and tame and tame again.
Crank up the music, charge your glass. This nation is going to dance all night.
A much needed new abbreviation emerges in time for the business end of the season. Can a corner be player X territory? The Brazilian Ronaldo versus the content machine? Footballer audiobook voiceover men phoning it in? Is it really a tight angle to score from the wing near the halfway line? Can a player receive their trademark yellow card? Can you have a business end to a raffle? A unique goal scoring verb, English football's peat crisis, and Keezy offers the biggest hint so far of the so-called dark forces. Brought to your ears by Goalhanger Podcasts. This is Football Clichés. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Football Clichés. I'm Adam Hurry. This is the Adjudication Panel, and with me are around 9 years of combined experience of Football Clichés podcasting. First of all, Charlie Eccleshare, how's it going?
Very well, thank you.
And David Walker, how are things?
Yeah, things are good.
Excellent. Right, let's begin. Well, this came from Elliot Binks. We've got a brand new abbreviation, guys, and I think I like it. On Monday night, Niall McCorn on 5 Live reporting duty for Notts County versus MK Dons.
6 goals and the excitement that only the EFL can provide on full display today. Aaron, Notts County 3, MK Dons 3. Incredible game in League 2, which had twists and turns galore. MK knew with Mansfield's game off and Wrexham playing tomorrow that a win here would take them level on points with those sides in the autos, and they were on course for it after Max Dean slammed in a stunner in the first half.
Really like autos, Dave. How familiar are you with the concept of the autos? Does it preoccupy you on a sort of biannual basis?
I've never heard it used before, that's for
right.
Sure. No, I've not, but I do like it. Yeah, it's good. I guess in League 2, it's a slightly, you know, because there's an extra place in League 2. So maybe... Right. Maybe there are more. There are always more teams that might be able to get there. But yeah, I think it's good. Yeah,
performing more of a function as an abbreviation here, Charlie, than some of the others we've had. Clino, for example, because automatic promotion places is a bit of a mouthful. Let's face it, and it's, you know, at this stage of the season, you're going to be using it quite a lot.
Yeah, autos feels very football-y.
Yeah,
you know, people who work in football using it. I'm sure that's more widespread than we know. But yes, I'd never heard it before.
Autos, love it. Really keen on that. Right, into injury time we go at the London Stadium. West Ham versus Spurs. Not keen on this at all.
Ward-Prowse. Emerson with a chance to cross. Good defending by Romero. Corner to West Ham. Ward-Prowse territory late on here for the Hammers.
Jake Payne writes in, Charlie says, a corner being announced as Ward-Prowse territory by Fletch. Surely that isn't a valid use of territory. It's an abuse of the term territory, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of 50-50 in that, yeah, it's his side and that it's on the left, so it's an in-swinger for him. Which,
oh, okay. I didn't think of that.
I think, yeah, but it's still, that's still not a territory. That's just... You know, you could say it's the right side for Ward-Prowse.
This is exactly the point I tried to make a few weeks ago when we were talking about when Darren Bent said that there's a corner in a dangerous area. and I think I said, well, what if you had a certain player that it was particularly suited to? And then here we go. Here we have a perfect example. But yeah, territory doesn't...
You can't own a very, very inflexible
situation, can you? I mean, in and around the area for a free kick, there are certain places that would suit certain players better than others. A bit further out, you can knuckleball it, that sort of thing.
Well, in the first half of this game, I think towards the end of the first half, there was a free kick for Ward-Prowse, bang in his territory. It was about 30 yards just to the, on the right-hand side. And they kind of made a big song and dance about his record and when he'd last scored a free kick and everything. And that was all perfect. We understand that. But yeah, one step too far, I think, the corner territory.
What he's almost getting at, I think, because he's saying it's late in the game, he's trying to set it up as like, it's late in the game. You know, this is
made
kind of perfect
for Ward-Prowse.
So, like, I don't know if there's a certain player or a kind of particular come of the hour type player where you might say, "Oh, this is
come of the corner, come of the man."
Yeah, this feels made for him. It's kind of hinting at that.
Hey, look, if there's one player that you'd want to deliver a corner in the 90th minute to get a winner, it probably is James Ward-Prowse. So I can see it. But yeah, for starters, a player can't have two territories. That's greedy. But yeah, can't have corners either. Right, next up, here's the Brazilian Ronaldo doing some light media work to promote some stunt he's done for Paddy Power. The conceit of which is he rocks up as a Sunday League super sub. And the twist is he's rubbish and he's indifferent and he gets subbed back off and he buggers off. And it's, you know, Paddy Power stunts aren't actually that terrible. On average, they're usually fairly imaginative. But on the side of this, Mail Sport did an interview with Ronaldo and they asked him the most "we've got Ronaldo for 5 minutes" thing they could possibly think of. And here it is. The pace of it is what is most excruciating for me.
We want to know who your ultimate football team would be.
Goalkeeper Buffon, Gigi Buffon, Cafu, yeah. Mm-hmm. Paolo Maldini.
Yeah.
Cannavaro, Roberto Carlos, Zidane, Maradona, what else, let me see, Pelé.
It's a pretty good team.
Okay, so Messi on the right. I put myself in the middle. And
go on.
Cristiano Ronaldo on the left.
Okay.
I mean,
I'm so knackered of hearing legendary ex-players' best 11s played with or otherwise.
But at least played with might invite some sort of insight.
I don't mind that particularly. I don't think it should be limited to the players you've only played with.
But then he's just naming the best players in the world.
Good point.
What are we getting from Ronaldo tennis that Pelé and Maradona, along with Messi, Cristiano Ronaldo and Zidane and himself, that's fine.
Yeah.
He's not even making any hard decisions. He's just naming the best players to have ever played the game. That's not a proper formation. It's completely worthless. I didn't think this bothered me. But it's just such a waste of his time. Like, at least if it's his own, like, best players you've played with, it's not original, but it might at least invoke, oh, really? You've gone for him. Why? What made him so special? What are you going to say? Oh, Pelé. That's interesting. What about Pelé? Oh, Maradona. Okay, yeah. You thought he was a good player. Oh,
David's kind of the right sort of material for this strand of content, isn't it, really? But what kind of over and under are you putting on how many times Ronaldo has had to pick the best 11 of all time for some junket?
If he's done that before, then fair play to him for pretending that he hadn't, because he was sort of going, who could I pick here? I don't know, maybe it was the first time he's been asked it. I don't know.
Is this just our age, Charlie, sort of collectively? What is our combined age? Not sure. Don't want to speculate. But is it just our age that you tend to kind of become a little bit weary of this sort of level of chat in football? I mean, it's right up there with who's the best Premier League import of all time? Bergkamp, Zola?
We have to take some responsibility because we live on social media and our algorithm is obviously geared towards serving us. My Instagram and Facebook algorithm seems to be best 11 and deleted Friends scenes that you've never seen before.
Okay.
The moment when Chana does this on Friends. So clearly, you know, I hold my hands up. I must be to blame for all of this. So yeah, I think it's just... kind of fatigue.
Even Ronaldo's fatigue as well, which really came across, I think.
But the thing is, if you've got 5 minutes with Ronaldo, and it probably is literally, you can have 5 minutes. What can you do? I mean, sure, you can be creative, maybe a bit more creative than this or whatever. But basically, it's a variation on it's this or a five-a-side team or it's a
I actually hate five-a-side teams more. I think I despise it. I know it's obviously even more of time at a premium situation, but I despise the fact that they're forced to make an absurd five-a-side team that bears... There's nothing in your brain that's going to make you go, oh, okay, yeah, I get this. It's stupid, stupid content.
You know, there's like the blind ranking thing. There's various sort of social media kind of trends that you can apply to anyone. You can't really have a conversation with him. You can't just go, you're not going to sit down and go, can we just go back to your days at PSV?
Yeah, let's dig into the PSV years, the underreported PSV years.
Obviously, you're right. I don't know what the medium is. I don't know what the midpoint is of this dilemma. You know, Charlie, you can see there's an autopilotness going on here. And whilst I agree with the point that he's putting some effort into faking having to do this for the first time, at least. But this plus the kind of original bit of content that he was there for, which was something like a 3-minute video of him rocking up for some Essex Sunday League team and being rubbish in a comedy fashion. And there's some bits and bobs that go on around it. How much money do you reckon he got for doing it?
Six figures, surely.
Do you know the answer?
I do.
I don't know if it would be that high.
I don't think he's coming over on a plane to dick around on a Sunday League pitch for anything less than six figures.
Go on, what's the figure?
He got 250 grand.
Really?
Plus a £40,000 private jet from Brazil to Madrid via Enfield.
Wow.
To do this. You're not turning it down, are you? And if you're going to answer who the best team you've ever played with as well.
I'm amazed it was that much. I mean, like, obviously... As my algorithm shows, you know, friends, Ronaldo, I'm very much a child of the 90s and I absolutely adore Ronaldo, but I'm amazed that they consider he's worth it nowadays in 2024.
It's got me thinking though, Dave, for the next live tour in the pub afterwards, it's not going to be like all comers. We're going to sort of invite people in one by one to ask Charlie what his best Premier League 11 is, or the best 11 he's ever played with.
Just the best 11 footballers.
50 quid.
That I'm aware of.
Well, look, they've got 5 minutes out of us on it, so... Money well spent on their behalf.
Early doors in this episode. Charlie, you seem a bit troubled. Are you all right?
Yeah, I'm all right.
I don't know. I think I know what's bothering you, actually. It's, do the voice actors who read footballers' autobiographies for audiobooks have a comprehensive grasp of the tunes for football chants that they might have to read out?
Oh my God, this sounds amazing.
This came from Adam Wright. This was from Chris Kamara's Unbelievable.
And when the crowd started singing, Chris Kamara is one of our own, I could feel myself welling up.
Do some research.
This is amazing.
This is an everlasting piece of literary content. You have to get it right.
That's so good. That someone's got to intervene.
And Dave, not only is it wrong, but you suspect this is completely on the hoof guess of what the tune might be. This isn't coming. It's not like he's been misled all these years. This is him just guessing from the text what the tune to this chant might be, if it is indeed a tune that he's attempted.
Well, I don't know about that. Because it's not a million miles off. It's obviously wrong, crucially, but it's close enough for me to think that he's tried to approximate it. He's like maybe listened to one, or maybe someone's gone in and said, maybe like the producer, whoever's with him, has sort of done a half-hearted demonstration of it. And then he's had to sort of repeat it himself.
But he definitely doesn't know the tune. Are you satisfied with that?
Yeah, definitely, yeah.
Fair play. Just give it a go.
Chris Kamara, he's one of our own.
That's what the official tune should be from now on. Right. Now, you may have seen Dan James's goal for Leeds against Hull, a 3-1 win. This was the ceiling goal, right in the last minute. Opposition goalkeeper up for a corner, that sort of thing. And an intense debate has broken out about the difficulty of the goal itself. Now, the ball was rolling over the halfway line, about 5 yards into the Hull half. Dan James in pursuit of the ball, followed by a few Hull defenders, and he sort of swiped it right over from on the right-hand side touchline into the goal. England flag appreciator Henry Winter tweeted that it was an absolutely brilliant goal from Dan James. Tight angle, great technique. One match report said Leeds broke, and from a tight angle, James slammed in the third to move the host back into automatic promotion places. Plenty of complaints, Dave, about calling this a goal from a tight angle. Instinctively, you had you feel about it?
If you hadn't seen the goal and you read that tweet, you would be imagining that Dan James is near the byline.
Yeah.
He's down near the byline and he's managed to squeeze it in from a tight angle. I just think in their minds, they've thought that they've seen the player near the touchline and thought, oh, it automatically thought, oh, it must be a tight angle. But if you think about it for a second, it isn't at all, really.
It's not at all. And Charlie, I'm tempted to argue that it's probably easier to score a goal from halfway line over on the wing if you're right-footed from the right-hand side than it is to score it from dead centre, because panicked sort of instinctive shots do tend to curl because you haven't got the time to sort of really measure them. So if anything, it's probably easier to sort of just bend it in from the right and hope it goes in. There's not that less of a goal to play with, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, I think you have more margin for error if you're more central, but being out wide does sort of, you still have a lot to aim at, and it tells you kind of exactly what you need to do.
Well, we have a fair bit of correspondence on this. None better than this from George Gretton and family. He says, my dad, brother and I decided to dust off our scientific calculators and Pythagoras textbooks from year 9 to find out how tight this angle really was. Based off the actual Ellen Road dimensions, 105 metres by 68 metres, and assuming that James was 5 metres into the whole half by the touchline and the ball crossed the middle of the goal, all fair assumptions, this gives an angle of 54.5 degrees between the path of the ball and the goal line. Can 54.5 degrees, Charlie, really be considered tight? The answer is no.
Superb.
Is tight angle narrower than acute? Acute is harder than tight.
Acute is just less than 90 degrees. So
yeah, technically speaking.
Technically,
yeah.
This is acute.
Yeah. In football terms, you mean though, in football speak? Yeah.
Oh, no, I think from an acute angle is a harder angle than tight.
George continues, Dave says, surely the angle could be no more than 30 degrees, or better still, in your low 20s or even your 10s before it's considered tight. 30 degrees seems fair for me. 45 degrees would be essentially shooting across the corner of the 6-yard box in a usual goal scoring situation into the goal, which obviously isn't a tight angle or an acute angle. So I think that's fine. So you're looking at 30 degrees, aren't you? The official EFL Instagram page, Charlie, called it the tightest of angles.
Wow.
Some players have scored from a corner kick, George points out. So surely the tightest of angles is zero. But is a corner zero? Because you're putting it out a little bit.
Because of the quadrant, yeah. So it's a few degrees, perhaps.
I suppose if it was an in-swinging one and you put it right on the line and the ball was overhanging either side, that is 0 degrees, isn't it?
James Ward-Prowse territory, of course.
Yeah. I'm delighted to say, Dave, that George has supplied us with the graphical working of all of this, with a centre circle and a goal and all the arrows and stuff, with a trigonometry at the bottom of it. Really good stuff. 54.4 degrees. Definitely not tight. Comprehensive.
And an annotated Dan James as well. just a brilliant illustration.
Undermined completely by the ball being an old-fashioned hexagon and pentagon ball. Some habits just die hard.
And bigger than his head as well, by the looks of this diagram.
A massive giant ball. Yeah. Some things are just not allowed to be accurate. Anyway, you may be aware that we're amid Ramadan at the moment, of course. And as recently as 2021, an agreement, Charlie, was put in place by the Premier League to allow Muslim players to break their fast during a match. Now, this was only 3 years ago, so I suspect some people might be kind of yet to overcome their curiosity about this, especially in the context of an ongoing football match. It might be a bit of a spectacle for some people to kind of get their heads around. Step in TNT Sports to give it the final rubber stamp of normality. 20 minutes into Newcastle against Everton, Newcastle 1-0 up. The play stopped for them to take on some food, and the commentator, according to FPL Challenged anyway, says that they deemed Eddie Howe to be the happier of the two managers at the iftar break. That's it. That's it. What a cultural gap has been bridged there.
Wow.
Happier of the two.
Is that a first? It must be.
I hope so.
The first in recorded sound.
I mean, 20 minutes in is probably okay territory to decide, Dave, which of the two managers is happier. I don't know if the scoreline kind of complicates that or not. I mean, Eddie Howe probably is the happier of the two if you're 1-0 up after 20 minutes.
Yeah, and they were battering them as well. You know, it wasn't a tight encounter. They should have been up by more than 1-0. Any extended break in play means that they've got to have something to fill that little bit of time, and it's a fair question to ask.
It was a good break as well, yeah. It was a good 3-4 minutes, it seemed. So, why not attribute the age-old happier of the two there? Delighted to see it. Right, next one comes from Dermot O'Darley. It was a tweet from Partick Thistle, Charlie. Full-time, Partick Thistle 1, Inverness 0. The first half strike from Robinson keeps all 3 points at the Wyre Stadium at Fir Hill. Dermot says, is this legit? Are the 3 points delivered to the stadium before the match? Does the away team take the points with them on the bus if they win? And crucially, what happens to the third point if the game ends in a draw? Now, I think what this original tweet might be derived from is if an away team wins, this idea that you take all 3 points away from Stadium X, which is a very established thing. But crucially, that doesn't necessarily imply that the points were there at the stadium beforehand. It's just something, they come with the match. But the home team don't keep them there, do they?
I don't think so. I've never thought of that being their kind of natural place, as this implies.
I would prefer a home team taking them away from the match, Dave. So the home team go away from the game with all 3 points. Don't keep them at the stadium. I don't like it.
I see what you mean, yeah. Does the referee come to the match with the 3 points and gives them to you at the end?
Independent adjudicator.
Like in the way that the teams hand the team sheet before the game. After the game, you distribute the points.
Yeah.
And the ref keeps the extra point if it's a draw.
I'm trying to think that there is in like football or sporting discourse this idea, though, that of certain things staying. Like with the Ashes or whatever, they stay, you know, they'll stay in Australia. Kind of thing, or a particular trophy or whatever stays like that.
Yeah, that's all right. That's a whole country for the trophy to stay.
Yeah,
in. I'm all right.
But
with
I think that.
That
I think that's where this sort of derives from, because you do sometimes hear this sort of construction. But yeah, it does sound weird because you don't own the home team doesn't have ownership of those 3 points.
And the natural rhythm of if Inverness had won, we return from Partick Thistle with all 3 points because you can see it in your head. They get, you know, they have to go and travel.
It's the spoils of war, isn't it? Mm. Yeah.
If you did it the other way around, as you're suggesting, it would be, you know, the journey is what we just go back to the training ground or the team hotel or the.
It's not that offensive. It's just so rare to see it. So that's what took me aback, really. We should reiterate again that this idea of the points. A game doesn't start with 3 points. A game starts with an indeterminate number of points, and then it's determined by the results. There isn't a third point that floats around. You know, you take the points, and that's the three, and it's points shared, and that was because you drew, and there was only 2 points on offer. The third isn't still there.
All the extra points that don't get awarded if there's a draw should be like rounded up, and at the end of the season, there's a winner takes all match. You can get all the bonus points.
Wow, that's a lot of draws. Right, final act of part one. Mike Hull gets in touch, Dave, and says the TalkSport comms during Ipswich Southampton declared Sam Morsy as picking up his trademark yellow card. Firstly, an individual player surely can't trademark a booking. Secondly, that's 13 bookings in 38 games this season. Can something you only do one game in three be your trademark? Well, let's deal with the first question here. You can't have a trademark yellow card. You probably use it in jest, maybe, but in regular speak, you can't go with trademark yellow card, but you would go with customary. He gets his customary yellow card because he's just someone who gets booked a lot. If you were to use trademark yellow card, Dave, it'd have to be for the same foul all the time.
It needs to be more specific. Yeah. Definitely.
You can't own the idea of being booked for yourself, can you?
Exactly. You could get booked for something innocuous, kicking the ball away, taking your shirt off. Or you could get booked for a cynical shirt pull on the halfway line when a player's getting away from you.
We're probably not too far away, Charlie, from trademark yellow cards. Because you hear talk about tactical fouls all the time, and there must be players who do it more than others.
Yeah, exactly. I think it is possible to have, or you know, oh, his trademark booking for dissent, which maybe would be like a Sunday league thing. But I've played with players who are it's always the same person who's, you know, he's having a go at the ref. It's another yellow for dissent.
Just leave it. And then they don't. Yeah. And it's a futile thing to do, but you want to look like you're doing it.
Would someone like Lee Catamol have had, because he would get booked for kind of big late tackles.
Yeah. I suppose Vinnie Jones might have had a trademark yellow.
Yeah. Like, I think it's probably just about possible.
On the second point, Charlie, of if it's regular enough to qualify as trademark, I think it is. 13 and 38. If you scored 13 identical goals in 38 games, that could be your trademark goal quite comfortably. And it wouldn't even have to be all 13, actually.
Yeah, I think numbers, and also because it's all a relative thing, isn't it? I mean, you know,
that's obviously. Shitload of bookings as well.
Yeah, exactly. Like, we think of one in two goals is like a good ratio. Now, obviously, one yellow in two games would be ridiculous. That's still only 50% of games, but that would still be way enough, you know, comfortably enough for it to be a trademark, because it would be an extraordinarily high number.
Yeah, we should keep the bar for trademarks high, for sure.
Someone like Palinha at Fulham, he gets a load of bookings. I think both this and last seasons, he reached the threshold for 10 yellows and got a 2-game ban. And he, in both seasons, and he loves to fly in with tackles. I wonder, I don't know it specifically the nature of his bookings, but I know he puts in a lot of tackles, and a lot of them are for late challenges.
The record is actually 14. No one's ever got 15 bookings in a Premier League season.
Wow.
I remember this because Jose Holobas got 14 for Watford in 16-17. And that,
can you picture the most typical one?
He was kind of a mixture of niggly fouls, cynical fouls, and had some dissent in him as well. He was a complete shithouse.
Imagine your trademark yellow being blocking a free kick from being taken. There he is again.
But I remember going into that game, that last game of the season that year, we played Man City and we were safe and there was nothing on the game.
Will he, won't he?
And we knew the manager was also going to go as well. well. So it was kind of like a thing. People wanted him to get booked to break the record.
What would you go for? Given that this isn't really kind of corruption territory, no one's going to get charged for this, are they? What would you go for? I always wonder this, because you don't want to make it too violent, because you might injure someone, or even indeed yourself. So it would have to be
something comical. Go and like boot the ball away. They're about to take a free kick or something. Just go and...
proper Zaire 74.
Yeah, exactly. A classy tribute to that. Or that
would be, I think the referee would laugh, actually. You get the mic deep. What are you doing?
Look. What was the one where... Was it Real Madrid under Mourinho where they had players deliberately getting booked so they'd get suspended for last group games and then for like dead last group games and then be eligible for knockouts? Do you remember that? I think one of them might even have been Xabi Alonso.
Really casual shirt tugs.
No, I think it was for taking ages over free kicks.
Oh, yeah. So there's a real kind of pantomime act that goes into that.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, God, it's like a throw-in, but with a free kick. It's like, oh, there's nobody there. What are you
that
doing?
That would be quite fun to do. Just do that.
You'd get a three-game ban, wouldn't you, if you got 15 yellow cards in the Premier League? Because you get 1 for 5, 2 for 10.
No, I don't know, because also the 10 and the 5 have a cut-off point. So it might be that... By the time you get to 15, it's a free-for-all. Is he level, Dave, with someone else at 14?
Yeah, well.
Hold a bus.
You get a three-match ban for 15 yellows, by the way.
At any point in the season?
Yep.
Wow. I mean, that's so many yellows.
It's actually, he's in illustrious company, actually. There's quite a few players who've got this, who are on 14. So Olivier Decor in 98-99. Mark Hughes in 98-99 when playing for Southampton. Robbie Savage in 01-02 playing for Leicester. Paul Ince.
Bissouma got close one year, didn't he?
He hasn't reached 14. Paul Ince were playing for Wolves in 03-04. Cech Tiote in 10-11. Lee Catamol, Sunderland, 14-15, Holibas. Etienne Capoue, actually, in 18-19 for Watford, which I didn't remember. And then, as you mentioned, João Paulinho, 22-23. So there are some, there's some names that you're not surprised to be hearing about there, for sure.
On top of that, if you get 20 bookings in a Premier League season, there is a risk of being charged with misconduct by the FA. I would say so. That would be mad. They'd be like, what are you doing, mate? What's wrong with you? That's the hearing. That's all it is.
Can you just stop doing it?
Right. End of part one. Back very shortly. Welcome back to Football Clichés. This is the Adjudication Panel. And Charlie, first entry for this one. Al Campbell asks, when a player or manager is asked, how does that rank? For example, to Harvey Barnes after his goal against West Ham the other day. Has anyone ever answered with anything except, it's definitely up there? It's the only option.
Preceded by a little laugh. It's right up there.
Because you have to leave a little bit of doubt, because you don't want to commit to being, that is the best goal I've ever scored.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
It's absolutely prime for the Lampardian transition as well, isn't it? Definitely up there. No, listen, it was a good goal.
Great moment.
The ball came to me and I was just in a good position.
It is. It's the perfectly poised answer. Not committing either way, but also implying that you've had other good bits happen to you as well. It's something of a humble brag, actually. Definitely up there. Like it.
But it's the same as if you get asked about favourite films or like favourite gigs or something by people just in conversation, small talk or whatever. And it's quite rare that you actually have a definitive answer. You haven't got your sort of top five ready and waiting in your head to slot something in there.
It's foolish to commit.
Yeah, and you end up, with that question, you end up just naming loads of things. You know, it's like when people are like, oh, what's your favourite album? By home, you're like, oh, that's good. No, that's also really good.
Who's the best guest you've ever had? Arlen Dix.
Exactly.
It's really hard to say.
Like with that humble brag thing that we're saying the players do, there's a good version of that is if someone who you went to a gig with is like, oh, I think that's the best gig I ever went to, and then you can top them and be like, yeah, it's probably, probably is one of the best I went to. Just gently implying, I have been to better ones.
Yeah. You haven't. Don't get too excited. Yeah. You want to be the least excitable of the two, for sure.
You've opened the door to me here to top you, so thank you.
Yeah, an infuriating habit for some people. That's fine, I get it. Right, the next one comes from Leon Foster. This is a mid-game tweet from Tranmere Rovers about two of their players who were on loan from other clubs. James Norris on loan from Liverpool and Rob Apter on loan from Blackpool. 51 minutes. James Norris spots the run of former Rovers under-9 teammate Apter and sends a beauty of a ball over the Colchester defence, but the keeper just about gets there first. Leon says, is this taking play together at youth level too far, Dave? Under-9s is a very strange age group to cite here. I think they're about 20 years old. There's no hope here that they've got any sort of telepathy that they might have developed 11 years ago. What's the point of mentioning it?
I don't know. Football fans do sort of like that stuff. Any sort of tenuous kind of connection to the history of the club. You know, the whole sort of Harry Kane at Arsenal thing. This sort of citation of, like, if you even had a trial as a youth player at one club, oh, actually started with us.
Yeah.
That's so true. Fans love saying, like, a player pops up. I've had this well. There's like a compulsion to be like, oh, he used to play for us, you know. Mm. Or he's ex-us. It's like a weird...
Who says that?
not those exact words, but you would say, oh, he's ex-Watford, you know.
Could let that slide. Someone would have tweeted in, I promise.
I think they knew the spirit at which that was meant. Yes, yeah. That's not a direct quote. But then... There's a weird...
some things can get a prefix, some things can't. It's fine. Do you know what, Charlie? I think it's enough of a coincidence, perhaps, that these two loanees probably were at Tranmere back in the day as kids. So I think it's probably enough of the tweet. But I wonder if under-9s is just too young an age group to cite in any context. I think it should be sort of, I don't know, under-15s onwards that it becomes a serious deal. Before then, it's just a bit of fun, isn't it?
Yeah, that feels like a kind of fine arbitrary cutoff. But I do think all of this comes down to when you're in a club environment and you're so kind of institutionalised and you have all this knowledge, I think there is kind of just a compulsion for it to come out wherever possible.
Yeah, and under-9s is still, you know, it's still an organised level of that club, so fair enough. We'll move on. Right, on the back of his excellent spot for Tuesday's episode, where he asked if nearly 1,000 years of commons experience is the most ludicrous combined age cliche ever, Josh McLaughlin reflected on top of that, Dave. I don't know why, but I see Mesut Haaland-Dix as the cup and the adjudication panel as the league. That is such a perfect observation.
This is our bread and butter.
It really is. What does that make the cliches quiz, Charlie? Is that like European football or is it World Cup? Is that international football? It probably is now because we're getting podcasts come on and take us on. Before, it would have been European, I would say.
Yeah, that sounds about right. Is there a... those are the only three formats, aren't there?
Well, I suppose you've got the 11s.
11s,
They're Charity Shield, aren't they?
No, don't do them down. Don't do them down.
Carabao.
Do you think?
Carabao can still be good. Carabao semi-final.
A two-legged Carabao semi-final.
Yeah.
Second leg... of a Carabao semi-final.
I love a good 11.
It works quite neatly now that we've modified the quiz format. So if the quiz is now international football, the adjudication panel is the league. It's a week in, week out, bread and butter. MHT is the cup, whichever cup you want to pick, domestic cup. And the 11s are Europe, but maybe not Champions League. Maybe like Europa League or Conference League.
Okay.
Yeah, that's good because they're a bit of a break from the, you know, the kind of pressure. But they're not checked because Champions League's maybe too pressured.
They're self-contained, aren't they? Yeah, I do like that. They don't feed back to each other. They are their own little thing. So maybe that does work. Yeah, bang on. Thanks, Josh. You really made us think about that one. Right, next one. Now, you might remember Keezy's recent jibe at Pochettino, something along the lines of, if you gave him the winning ticket to a raffle, he still wouldn't win the prize, or something along those lines. Love this one from Hans Friedland. At this year's St. Patrick's Day raffle in Nairobi, the MC said halfway in, now we're getting into the business end of the raffle. Can you have a business end of the raffle? If you're announcing the winners of a raffle, shouldn't the business end be at the start? Is the raffle a kind of continuously bubbling thing, or does it reach a crescendo?
Yeah, I think it does, doesn't it? Aren't there kind
of
various...
Do prizes get better?
Yeah, I reckon so, that you finish it with, and now the big star prize that you've all come for.
But do they consistently get better?
Well, here's the thing.
I mean, you're always going to want to finish on a flourish, right?
It depends on the format of the raffle, because if the MC has thought about it in advance, then you would have saved the best prizes till last, and therefore the business end would be at the end. But sometimes you have the raffles where you can come up and you can pick whatever you like from the table, and obviously all the best things go first, and then at the end you're left with the
that
scraps.
That seems a really unfair way of doing a raffle. I mean, all tickets are equal, right?
Yeah, I know, but that's the luck of the draw. You're out first. You get the pick of the bunch.
I suppose you still won a prize. Yeah, I guess. Yeah, okay.
But it's an unsatisfying spectacle. For the neutral.
Maybe it should ascend gently into superstar prizes. Fine, okay. Right, Jude writes in next, Charlie, and says, not football related, but at the end of some on-the-job training, the course leader admitted she was letting us go early because she had a Pilates class for her sins. Is it for my sinsy for a middle-aged woman to be doing Pilates? No, but there's a certain element of middle-class guilt, perhaps, Charlie.
And I think there's an awareness that you're a bit of a cliche. I think that's more of what it is than a kind of I shouldn't be doing it or should. It's just like, oh, I know this is what we all do, but, you know, I'm doing a Pilates class kind of thing.
Yeah, what is it about Pilates, Dave, that puts it in the For My Sins territory? Do you think it is that it's just it's a bit kind of, you know, latte drinking liberal elite situation or not.
Maybe. I don't think it should be. But yeah, it probably does have that.
It got some connotations though, hasn't
it? It's kind of a level up from yoga in that sense.
Yeah, you wouldn't say yoga for your sins. Pilates, definitely you would. That's interesting. What other exercise class? Spinning for your sins? Spinning is quite embarrassing, as good exercise as it is.
Spinning, again, I think fits into that slight I'm a walking cliche category. Again, I'm not saying that should be the case. As well, if you said like, yeah, you know, I live in, as you say, in a kind of in London, and I've started going to a pottery class for my sins, is a kind of like, I know this is what, you know, liberal metropolitan elite people do, and yeah, I'm aware of that kind of thing.
Yeah, pottery is a little bit for my sins.
I think there's some sort of elements of gym classes are kind of perhaps outdatedly and weirdly sort of gendered.
Definitely less so, I would say now, but yeah,
for sure. But I think there'll be classes that certain lads would be like, they went to Zumba.
Zumba's for my sins. Yes, it is. It is. It is. Okay. Michael Carr writes in next day. He says, I've been catching up on episodes over Easter. During a discussion about what constitutes fired home, you used other examples of prefixes to home, including tuck home. But don't you also tuck away? As home and away are the opposite things, there must be a significant difference between tucking home and tucking away. This is a great, great observation, Dave, because I, off the top of my head, I can't think of another goal-scoring verb that can be directed home and away, and yet, which is still essentially the same thing. Can you do anything else away to score a goal? You tuck a goal away. He tucks it away.
I think it's just it's inherent with the tucking. It goes so well because it forms the image in your mind of, I'm just going to tuck that away there, just out of sight, just tucking it away.
There's no other goal scoring verb that works for away.
Yeah,
you can put it away, home, but you can't put it home.
And you can't fire. He's fired it away.
He's fired it away. He gets the shot away.
Yeah. Gets the shot home.
Yeah, so that's the first part of a shot. It doesn't speculate on where the ball ended up. Well, if you tuck a ball away, then everyone knows where it's gone. Interesting. Very interesting to me that that's the only verb that it's usable for. And yet, are there any differences between tucking home and tucking away? Probably not. They're both very tidy, aren't they, Charlie?
Mm,
they both imply that it's been done with a minimum of fuss, and they both end up in exactly the same place.
Yeah.
Love it. Very interesting observation. Thanks, Michael Carr. Right. Have you been thinking about this one, Dave? Someone sent me this tweet from Paul Day. It says, I've been lying in bed for an hour this morning trying to think of footballers who are known as Pete. I've got plenty of Peters, but struggling with Pete's. I can't think of a Pete.
Pete.
Did?
No.
Was Peter Whittingham known as Pete Whittingham by supporters of his club?
Potentially, clubs? But no, yeah. This has to be a wide accepted, arguably even on their Wikipedia page, Pete. Like Pete Sampras is a Pete, for example, close to your heart. But
yeah.
Footballers called Pete?
Big Peach Michael.
This is such a good and totally ridiculous question.
Pete Beardsley.
Pete Crouch.
We might think of one, but it won't defeat the overall point here, Charlotte, that there are basically no footballers called Pete in pretty much any country. Why? If there were, what kind of players? Because we've had the Matty discourse before. We know what Matties are, but we don't. What would a Pete be? Like a sort of midfield kind of, not hard man, but general?
Or just a quite solid fullback, Pete?
Maybe, yeah. Dependable old Pete. Good old Pete.
No, I've got it up now. The spreadsheet with all Premier League players.
There's not going to be a single one. Not a chance.
Let's have a look.
Pete Reedy.
Yeah, Reedy. Peter, 26. Crouch, Atherton, Schmeichel, Beardsley, Beargry, Unlove, Odenwingie, Pete Fear.
Pete Fear.
Pete Enkelman.
They get better. How can a name transform so much?
Peter Ramage, of course. Peter Lovenkrantz. Reedy. Butler. Shirtliff. Kennedy. Sergio Peter. Etebo. Peter Clark. Peter Canero. Peter Markstead. Peter Dane. Peter Billing. Peter Kurucz.
Pete Billing. Pete Billing.
Pete Billing could work.
Pete Whiston, and that's it.
Wow. There's just no footballers
incredible
called Pete. Probably not in the EFL either, Dave. If you go down the 92, I don't think there'll be a Pete.
Not now. But I mean, generally, it's quite an old-fashioned name.
I don't think it doesn't even feel like a 70s
that's
thing.
That's amazing. Yeah, it's just...
I've got a mate called Pete.
Oh, we've all got a mate called Pete. But there are no footballers called Pete.
And he's not a very good footballer.
It's not even a far-fetched thing to be called Pete. And Peter's right for shortening as well. So I find
that baffling.
What is going on? A real dearth of Petes. The perennial Pete problem in English football. Anyway, Paul Day, hope you got out of bed by now.
Pele isn't a translation of Pete, is it?
No, no, it's not. Right. A bit more of a boring question. This is from Gaudino. He says, listening to the quiz the other day whilst I had Blackburn versus Ipswich on, and it got me thinking of how many grounds that have featured in the Premier League who have had a switch of sides for the TV cameras. Does anyone know? I think I've got five. Blackburn, Watford, West Ham, Chelsea, Luton. Grounds who have switched their sides for the TV cameras.
That's such a good question. I mean, I can think of changed angles.
Yeah, we're not having angles.
Yeah.
Yeah, because angles are often to do with either Premier League regulations or the fact that the stand has just got bigger.
Yeah, yeah.
I want
it's still a weird
blown
thing, though.
Oh, yeah.
West Ham at the new stadium, or are they talking about Upton Park in the old days?
That was Upton Park. They definitely switched it.
Like, obviously, for covering games, there are some where you are then the wrong side from the TV cameras. Mm. It's still a really weird experience right. When you watch the goals back. I do yeah. still find it quite odd.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, it's a shame that Luton had to change theirs, Dave, because I quite like the kind of, you know, conservatories for directors' boxes that they had. It was a nice little touch. I miss that. Don't see them now.
The similar thing with Watford, actually. They changed sides basically to hide a stand that had been condemned. That there were no supporters in that old wooden stand, so they put the cameras in that
propaganda
stand.
Right, yeah. I see.
Yeah.
Okay. If anyone's got any advances on those, but more importantly, any footballers called Pete, we need to know immediately, because you'll get straight on the podcast if you do. Right then, speaking of men who don't have the answers, it's time for Keys and Grey Corner. I saved this one just for you, Charlie, because you weren't here for Tuesday's episode. This was the more timeless of the bunch. Last week, Football Clichés listener James Dixon got a Richard Keys exclusive. James has a podcast called The Ground Jewels. I believe, Dave, you've done Ground Jewels, haven't you?
I have, yeah.
So you and Keezy have shared a podcast.
We have, yeah. I was on first as well. So Keezy very much in my wake. but yeah, it's where people go on and talk about their favourite sporting, not just football, sporting okay. ground, stadium.
I see. Right. Well, Charlie, the big man, appeared on the Ground Jewels to talk about his beloved Highfield Road. Also a few other things from his life and times. Now, at the start of a question, James threw in that he'd done a bit of research on Keyes' Wikipedia page. And so before he actually answered that question, Keyes had a slight digression.
Moving into television after a stint in radio, how does your relationship with the team sort of change when you're no longer in the city?
Well, just with a reference to the Wikipedia page, it probably is as accurate as we're ever going to get it, but I did have trouble when I'd left Sky in convincing them to leave it alone, because at midnight every day they would change it and look to cause me as much harm as they possibly could in doing so. And in the end, we had to take legal action and come to an agreement that what's there, I think, is vaguely what they find acceptable. But the story of how I left and why they found unacceptable and constantly changed and removed. But that's just an aside. You're the only person that I've ever told that to. but yeah, I suppose I'm saying that because you can't be too sure about Wikipedia pages.
Yeah.
But I think, yeah, most of mine now is correct. And yeah, you're right. Relationship with the...
This strikes me as something that might preoccupy him quite a lot over there in Doha, Charlie.
Oh my God, that was an extraordinary...
Midnight every day.
Even by his
They've
standards.
Done it again. They've switched it back.
What an extraordinary aside that was. And yeah, of anyone ever to be really preoccupied by what their Wikipedia page says about them, he would be high up my list on people most bothered by that.
Huge question though, Dave. Do you think this may well be the dark forces that he used to allude to?
Mm.
People editing his Wikipedia page to slightly change the narrative of his exit from Sky Sports?
Perhaps, yeah. You can do a bit of digging and find out who's edited a Wikipedia page,
you
can't
you? Yeah. You can go back quite a long way. So I'm looking at what midnight edits on your Wikipedia page on a daily basis. There should be a nice pattern there for me to find.
I've tracked the IP address.
And it was Barney Francis.
It was in Isleworth.
Oh, Keezy. Right, thanks to you, Charlie Eccleshare.
Thank you.
Thanks to you, Dave Walker.
Thank you.
Thanks to everyone for listening. We'll be back on Tuesday. See you then.